or buzzing about questioning people.
No, but Mr. Piper wrote a note to me, Sally said, blushing. He asked if we would be so kind as to send over sandwiches before at 7:30.
So they should all be there at 7:30. Good. I better get moving and go over to Cherry Trees right away.
Mr. Whitford told me the ladies are going home tonight. Miss Layton rang up Miss Chandler at work to tell her. Miss Layton gave me ever such a good tip.
You deserve it, Sally.
Thank you, madam. I do my best.
And a very good best it is. Sally went off, beaming. Daisy hoped all would go well with her, whether the future held a job in London, or marriage to Ernie, or to someone else, she allowed. She got out of bed and washed her face and hands in the basin. Shedding the creased blouse she had worn to bed, she decided to put on a dress instead of the costume she had been wearing. As she brushed her curls into place, she wondered whether to go straight to Cherry Trees or drop in at the police station to see whether Alec, Underwood, or one of their minions was there. It was just 100 yards or so, but in the wrong direction, possibly fruitless, and she hadn't found out yet about the possible payment to Mrs. Hedger. She might as well wait until she had collected all her snippets of information. That way, she'd have to suffer through only one ragging for her interference. The walk back from Cherry Trees was uphill, though not steep. Daisy considered taking Alec's car. If she did, however, he was bound to need it. She left a note telling him where she had gone and asking him to pick her up in the car, if possible. At least it had stopped raining. The Royal Blue Austin 12 was not where Alec had parked it. How lucky she had decided against driving, or she would now be feeling aggrieved at its absence. About to turn into Orchard Road, she saw a large man walking towards her up Station Road. His hat brim hid his face from the light of the street lamp, but his walk was unmistakable. Daisy glanced round to make sure no one was about, then hailed him. "Hello, Tom." He tipped his hat.
"Good evening, Mrs. Fletcher. The ladies have been allowed to return home, I take it."
"Once a detective, always a detective. Are you in a hurry, or will you walk along with me?"
"My pleasure. The chief explained why I'm here, I assume."
"Because you're bored stiff with being retired." Daisy tucked her hand under his arm. He chuckled.
"Haven't found my civilian feet yet, and that's the truth."
"Also because you're the best at certain aspects of the job that no one else available is good at. You're very unofficial, and I'm not to recognize you in public."
"You did nicely when we ran into each other in the doorway last night. Not a blink."
"Just a wink," Daisy retorted, "which was your doing. Have you found out anything useful?"
"Oh,"
Tom pondered.
"I don't see why I shouldn't tell you a bit of it. I've traced the gardener and, more important, the housekeeper who used to work for Mrs. Gray."
"Already? Did you talk to them? What did they say?"
"I had a chat over a pint with the gardener, but I'm too unofficial to go asking nosy questions. Not unofficial enough to tell you what he said, anyway. The housekeeper's moved away. The chief will have to go after her. The missus heard some gossip that likely came from her in the first place. Well, I can tell you that much."
"But not what the gossip is."
"Right."
His tone told her he was grinning, and she visualized the way his sweeping moustache twitched when he grinned. "It sounds as if you've both been busy and successful. I suppose you won't tell me how you communicate with the chief, either."
"Not if he hasn't, though I can't see why he wouldn't. Well, here we are."
He stopped at the gate of cherry trees.
All right to walk home, are you?
Yes, thanks. Night, Tom. Give my regards to Mrs. Tring.
Daisy went up the path and rang the bell. Vera came to the door.
Come in, Daisy. Sorry about the smell, but carbolic is better than...
Her voice faltered. Infinitely better.
Isabel's left the cellar door open to air it out. We're keeping the rooms closed off as much as possible, but it seeps in everywhere. Do you mind coming into the kitchen? Izzy's cooking.
Of course not.
She said there's plenty, so you're welcome to stay for supper. But doubtless Alec is expecting you.
Actually, no. He's too busy this evening. It's part of being a copper's wife, never knowing quite when he'll turn up. Often, he can't even let me know in advance.
Vera opened the kitchen door. They hurried through, and she closed it behind them.
The kitchen smelled slightly fishy, but much less obnoxious than the hall or passage.
Hello, Daisy.
Isabel was at the sink, scraping and slicing carrots.
I decided I'd better bung out the beef, though it seemed to be perfectly all right. I just couldn't face it. We're having fish pie. I hope you'll stay.
Yes, thanks.
Willie said this morning she'll probably work late today, so we're not waiting for her.
Alex working late too. Daisy sighed. No such thing as regular hours for coppers.
While the carrots cooked, and a delicious smell emanated from the oven, they sat at the kitchen table with a glass of white wine. Isabel had splurged to celebrate their return home.
I know it's been only 2 days, but it seems like forever.
It's a pity Willie isn't here,
said Vera.
We'll save a glassful for her.
Daisy, did Alec tell you what the letter from France said?
Sorry, I haven't actually seen him yet, and I didn't want to leave it at the police station for him, in case it got lost. I've got several other things to tell him.
About Mrs. Gray's trunks?
That's one. Also, I wanted to ask you whether you paid Mrs. Hedger for the time she worked between when Mrs. Gray disappeared and you moved in. If you know how long that was, it would help the police pin down the date she died.
No, I didn't pay her. It may seem mean, but I hadn't asked her to work, and there were so many unexpected expenses just then. We all agreed we weren't morally obliged, even Vera.
So it won't be in your account book.
That's a pity.
Did she ask to be paid?
Oh, yes. And that's another thing. I had no way to tell if she was honest about how long she'd worked unpaid. For all I knew, or no, for that matter, she could have added a few extra days. Though now, I think she's pretty honest, whatever her other flaws.
What date did she claim she was last paid? Isabel frowned in concentration, then shrugged.
I can't remember.
I bet Willie remembers, said Vera. She always remembers even the most insignificant numbers.
True.
Even the numbers on a half-seen license plate.
Will you ask her?
I hope she'll be home before you leave.
Isabel got up to test the carrots.
Just a couple of minutes more.
She opened the oven door and took out a haddock pie, topped with crispy mashed potatoes.
We were going to eat in here tonight, Daisy. Do you mind?
Not at all.
Having been properly brought up, she would have said exactly the same, even if she abhorred the thought of dining in the kitchen. Apple Charlotte followed the delicious fish pie. Willie still wasn't home by the time Isabel served coffee. They were taking their first sips when the doorbell rang.
Not Willie, said Vera, getting up. Unless she's lost her key.
She went out to return a moment later with Alec.
Good timing, darling. I wasn't looking forward to walking back.
All good policemen have a well-developed sense of timing. Good evening, Isabel.
Good evening. Have you eaten? Asked Isabel, ever practical.
Yes, thanks. The Saracen sent us in some sandwiches.
Coffee?
Please. Vera, or Miss Layton, if you prefer it in the circumstances. I'm going to have to ask you to describe to me your unpleasant experience with Cartwright.
No! Vera shot an accusing glance at Daisy. I trusted...
Inspector Underwood talked to Mr. Turnbull, who, incidentally, did not give him your name when he spoke of Cartwright's misbehavior. It wasn't too difficult to deduce that you were one of his victims. We don't expect to run into any difficulty in finding the other two.
Daisy said the police wouldn't be interested. It wasn't bad enough for him to be arrested.
Judging by what the three of you told the rector, and assuming he reported accurately to the inspector, that is correct. Our only interest is in whether the details of his actions towards you indicate a pattern of behaviour that might have subsequently escalated.
In other words, said Daisy, he might have gone on to push Mrs. Gray downstairs. Alec frowned at her.
Miss Layton.
I can't. Don't be a jellyfish, Vera, Isabel said bracingly. Just imagine how you'd feel if Cartwright went on to kill someone else, or even just assaulted another woman, because you wouldn't help catch him.
If you'd rather, said Alec, you can tell Daisy, and she'll take it down in shorthand. However, Underwood and I will both be reading her report. We may, in that case, have further questions, and in the end, either way, we'll have to have your signature on it, stating that it's correct.
You never know, said Daisy. Talking about it may help you to put it in perspective.
Here, or elsewhere?
Alec asked remorselessly.
With or without Daisy or Isabel?
Vera gave Isabel a pleading look. Isabel got up and poured her another glass of wine. Have a little Dutch courage. Twisting the stem of the wine glass in nervous fingers, Vera fixed her eyes on the pale liquid. She began to speak very fast.
The children had all left. I was writing on the blackboard when he came in, through the connecting door. A poem. How do you like to go up in a swing? Do you know it? The little ones love it. I looked back to see who it was, and I smiled at him. I wish I hadn't.
For pity's sake, Isabel exploded. That doesn't make it your fault. Alec gave her a look of the sort that could shut Daisy up in full flow. No mean achievement.
Did Cartwright say anything, Miss Layton?
I don't think so. I can't remember.
It doesn't matter.
I turned back to the board and went on writing, and I explained to him that I was going to have the children copy the poem as best they could and memorize it. He came up behind me.
You didn't hear him coming?
I was talking, as I said. Besides, he wears rubber-soled shoes so that the children can't hear him creeping up on them. He shouldn't be a teacher. He's a bully.
Indignation trumped modesty.
He put his arms round me and felt my bosom and kissed my neck. It was horrid. I got away and ran to the outside door. That's when he called me horrible names.
You need not repeat his words. Did he pursue you?
Just a few steps. He stopped and threatened me.
Threatened violence?
No. If I told anyone, he'd deny it, and I'd lose my job.
He made no attempt to attack physically, to give you a push or a slap.
He shook his fist,
Vera said doubtfully.
I could have been outside before he reached me. Someone might have seen. He went back into his classroom and slammed the door.
Has he tried anything since?
No, but I've been afraid he might.
You'll be all right now. I'll be very surprised if Cartwright doesn't leave at the end of term, if not before. Thank you for being brave enough to tell me.
Alec took a last mouthful of coffee and stood up.
Daisy, are you ready to go?
Yes, I'll just get my...
Intercepting a disappointed look from Isabel, Daisy changed direction. But there are a couple of things I must give you. She dug into her handbag for the letter from France.
Later, Daisy. I've got to get back to the station.
Once in the car, she returned to the subject. Darling, I really do have some important information for you. Perhaps I'd better come with you to...
How important?
Very.
Daisy, what have you been up to?
Nothing. Mostly just taking messages for you.
Messages?
A telegram from Mr. Crane, for one.
Great Scott, Daisy. What does he say?
I don't know. It was delivered, not telephoned, and I didn't read it.
How do you know it's from the super, then?
The boy told Sally it's from the yard. There's a message from Tom, too.
I told you not to...
I met him in the street, in the dark. He walked me to cherry trees. Do you want to know what he said?
Of course,
Alec said crossly.
That can't wait till we reach the station. Underwood doesn't know about Tom.
He didn't tell me any details. She related the snippets the retired detective sergeant had passed on. Does it sound helpful?
Might be.
How about what Vera said? He sighed.
A washout. It tends to suggest Cartwright was likely to confine his anger at rejection to verbal abuse. A suggestion is not evidence. Your friend Willie wasn't home yet.
No, she'd let them know she'd probably be working late.
With any luck, finishing up the job. Perhaps we'll be able to clear up that side of things tomorrow, if not tonight.
Vaughan's defalcations, if that's the right word. Did you see him tonight?
Not yet. We had an appointment with him and his wife, but they went off to the theatre in town before we arrived. We left poor Ernie there. Not that he wasn't being spoiled rotten by the servants. To phone in when the Vaughans return, however late.
Does that mean you'll be getting up at 1 in the morning to go off and interview them?
If I get to bed at all. Underwood is no slacker, and he's on his mettle.
Treading the fine line between competing and cooperating with Scotland Yard, poor man. Well, I won't tell you any more until I can tell him at the same time. Anyway, here we are. 29. Alec preceded Daisy into the room.
Mr. Underwood, my wife has information for us. May she come in?
Yes, of course.
The inspector came to the door.
Good evening, Mrs. Fletcher. What have you discovered?
Daisy was unwontedly nervous. Underwood's presence would deter Alec from blowing her up, but he might himself take a dim view of her activities, though he was too polite to accuse her of meddling, she hoped. The telegram first, she decided. She couldn't get into too much trouble over that. This is addressed to Alec, she said, handing it over. Miss Hedger gave it to me to give to him. She told me the boy said it's from Scotland Yard. Alec took a steel paper knife from the inkstand on the desk, slit open the envelope, and scanned the enclosed form.
Damn! A drat!
He gave it to Underwood, who read it and said,
Pity. We've lost one of our suspects. I suppose the Foreign Office couldn't be mistaken.
They could, of course. But I, for one, am not about to challenge them without a good deal of other evidence.
Which we haven't got. Nothing but motive. All right, Mrs. Fletcher. What's that?
Daisy held out the French envelope. The foreign stamp made both Alec and Underwood sit up and brought Pennycook to his feet for a closer look. Underwood reached for it.
From France, and addressed to Mrs. Gray.
He picked up the paper knife.
How did you get a hold of it, Daisy?
Alec's tone was ominous. The inspector looked up with a glance of mild, slightly amused inquiry. I was about to tell you. It's addressed to Cherry Trees. The bobby at the gate wouldn't let the postman deliver there on Monday, so he left the post at the post office, and they kept this morning's delivery too. I was with Isabel, Miss Sutcliffe, when she went in to fetch it. Of course, she showed it to me. She didn't know when she'd see you, Alec, or D.I. Underwood, and she assumed I'd see you sooner, so she asked me to pass it on. I gave her a receipt, and she gave me a note saying she'd given it to me on the understanding I'd hand it over to the police. Daisy found the bit of paper and laid it on the desk.
Very thoughtful, Underwood approved.
He slid the knife under the flap, trying with a delicate touch to open the envelope undamaged.
Daisy, you'd better go,
said Alec. Oh, but I've got more to tell you.
What on earth?
Where on earth are you, Judith darling? Underwood interrupted, reading. We've been expecting you for weeks. Gigi is biting his nails. Sure you've had an accident. I told him you're just enjoying the flesh pots of Paris, which only makes him bite his nails the more. Darling, you didn't say which hotel you're staying at, so I hope the horrid people who bought your house will forward this. Love from all of us. Do hurry. I can't read the signature. Here, take a look.
He passed it to Alec.
Could well be Liz, don't you think?
Let me see, Daisy requested. Yes, I'd say it was Liz, then either a K or an X, an initial or a kiss.
Elizabeth Knox,
said Alec. Daisy handed the letter back to the inspector. The address is quite legible.
An address in Saint-Tropez.
And I know the hotel in Paris, Daisy said triumphantly. All three men stared at her.
You do?
Underwood was incredulous.
How the deuce?
Darling, Isabel was naturally anxious about not being able to forward the letter to Mrs. Gray, and...
This was before the two of you realized she ought to give it to us, I suppose,
Alec said ironically. It must have been, mustn't it? Anyhow... It seemed to me it might be worth asking at the station, the railway station, whether she'd sent on any trunks by train. And if so, where to? The station master said the records will be at the railway company offices in London. But he remembered two going to Saint-Tropez, and a third was shipped to Paris, to the Majestic Hotel. For a moment, silence reigned. Then Underwood said,
I can't believe I didn't think of asking the railway.
We've been pursuing other leads,
said Alec,
and it's been only 2 days. But you're right, we should have thought of it. Well done, Daisy, though it would have been better to mention your brilliant idea to us and leave it to us to follow up.
Daisy decided to accept the praise and ignore the second part of this. There's something else. She paused, waiting for exclamations of astonishment, dismay, congratulation, or disapproval. Apparently, she had exhausted Alec and Underwood's capacity for such emotions. They just looked at her, so she continued.
All I need is a scrap of information from Willie. Miss Chandler. She wasn't home yet. Alec frowned.
If you're expecting her to discuss her work with you...
Nothing to do with her work. She's silent as the grave about that. She has no reason to keep quiet about what I want to find out.
What might that be, Mrs. Fletcher?
The inspector sounded resigned. A date. It should narrow down the date of death. Both men opened their mouths. Daisy hurried on. I was thinking about it, thinking that Mrs. Hedges in the best position to say when Judith Gray was last seen alive. Assuming she's dead.
You may be sure we'll be questioning her again.
And will you get any answers? I gather she was no more willing to talk to Alec than to me and Isabel. It struck me that she very likely wanted to be paid for the work she did while the house was unoccupied, and that Isabel probably keeps the household accounts, and so would know how long that was.
What strikes me, said Underwood, is we could do with a few women on the force. A different point of view they have. How long did she work without pay?
They decided they weren't responsible for what they hadn't asked for, so it's not in the account book. However, both Isabel and Vera assure Willie must remember the last date Mrs. Hedger said she had been paid. It's a number, you see.
Miss Chandler never forgets numbers.
Exactly. That's everything I had to tell you, so if you'll excuse me, I'm going back to the hotel. Alec walked her out to the street door.
I have to say, well done, love. And I'm trying not to say, don't meddle. But you must realize that the more helpful to us you are, the more likely the killer will put two and two together and do his utmost to stop you.
Daisy reckoned a grudging compliment was better than a stinging rebuke. I can't see how he'd ever find out. I don't go round interrogating people, except the station master. And that was really Isabel, who had a good reason for asking.
If he has his wits about him, he'll have noticed or heard that you're spending more time here than being a copper's wife can explain.
Oh, no, darling. I'm the clingy kind of wife that just can't let her adored husband alone. She reached up to put her arms round his neck and kiss him, and he obligingly responded in kind. Anyone observing them through the glass of the door might well have believed her words. Alec watched Daisy go off towards the Saracen's Head, wondering whether she'd heed his parting warning.
Stay out of it, and be careful.
Or had even heard it. She'd do what she considered right, no matter what he said. He returned to the others.
I'm sorry,
he said to Underwood. The inspector shook his head, grinning.
The unstoppable Mrs. Fletcher. Well, she's done all right by us. Mrs. Knox, being British... I take it I can just send her a wire. Are we required to go through the yard and the Sarette for the Majestic Hotel?
In the ordinary way, I'd get in touch directly with one of the French officers I've dealt with before. But given my officially unofficial status, we'd better do it by the book. You'll want Superintendent Parry's permission, I imagine.
I rang him while you were outside to report the latest news. He's not available. We'll go ahead on my own authority, and if he doesn't like it, he can lump it. Will you deal with the yard?
He pushed the telephone across the desk. Alec asked the operator for the superintendent on duty at New Scotland Yard. As a police call, it had priority. But even so... 10 minutes passed before she rang back and connected him. To his relief, Superintendent Rossiter had the night watch. Rossiter was a friend of Crane and already knew about Alec's peculiar, unofficial mission.
In fact, he was easier to deal with than Crane would have been. He simply authorized the contact with a foreign force without asking any of the awkward questions about Daisy that Crane would surely have posed. Ringing off, Alex said,
"We've got the go-ahead. You'd like me to compose the telegram?"
"I would. You speak French, I take it."
"Speak, read, and write reasonably well. But I've never mastered French telegrammese. You're right that it would be polite and politic to use French. If you think your county budget can hold up at tuppence halfpenny per superfluous word."
"Hang the budget."
"Very well. Hang the county budget. Let me get straight exactly what you want to find out."
"Is Judith Gray there? If not, has she been there? If so, has she left a forwarding address? And what is it?"
"Admirably succinct."
"Have I left anything out?"
"I'd say you've covered it. Let me get on with it."
Alec wrestled with turning the message into an abbreviated, yet clear and comprehensible French version. He left off the accents, as he suspected an English telegraphist wouldn't be able to transmit them. The result looked unfinished. He was engaged in adding them, acute, grave, circumflex, and sedilla, when a constable came in with a note for him.
"The boots from the Saracen brought it, sir."
"Mrs. Fletcher doing our job for us again?" Underwood asked, as Alec unfolded it.
His tone was not altogether pleased.
"No, it's anonymous."
"Tom, of course."
"About Mrs. Gray's servants. Our informant met the gardener who used to work for the Grays in a pub. In Sear Green."
"Next stop up the line. Just a couple of miles."
"The pub is the Jolly Cricketers, according to Mr. Anon, our informant. The gardener's name's White. Half the patrons were talking about the murder, of course, so White spoke up. He said he wasn't surprised someone did for Mrs. Gray. She was quick to complain when something wasn't to her liking, but never gave a word of praise or thanks. Anon asked whether all the servants disliked her. It seems the housekeeper, Mrs. Clark, had already registered with the London agency before she was given notice."
"Mrs. Clark, eh? Doesn't sound too easy to trace."
"No, a lamentably common name. We might have to try, though. According to Anon, she told White there were goings-on in the house she disapproved of, but she wouldn't name names."
"Does Anon mention the lady's maid?"
Alec consulted Tom's note.
"There was a high turnover of ladies' maids. The last was a Miss Lewis. High and mighty, didn't consort with gardeners. According to Mrs. Clark, though, she was furious when told she was to be turned off because Mrs. Gray wanted a French maid. She departed the next day without serving out her notice."
"Lewis," Underwood said gloomily. "Be a job tracing her, too. And nothing to be done till the servants' agency's open tomorrow. It's all very second and third hand," he added with dissatisfaction.
"Anonymous letters commonly are. This last bit is equally unverified. All the same, it could be more immediately useful. Anon says..."
A knock on the door. Not waiting for a response, Isabel Sutcliffe opened it, stopping on the threshold. "The officer at the desk said to go straight in. I hope I'm not interrupting." The inspector smiled at her as he rose.
"Not at all. You're very welcome."
He hurried round the desk to hold a chair for her. Catching Alec's amused eye, he quickly added,
"I expect you have information for us."
Daisy explained about the significance of the date Mrs. Hedger was last paid.
"Yes,"
said Alec.
We ought to have thought of it ourselves.
Isabel absolved them. It's only natural. It's usually women who pay the cleaner.
I have no excuse, Underwood admitted. As a widower, I'm the one who pays the charwoman.
Eyes brightening, she consoled him. You've been busy. Well, Willie came home soon after Daisy left. She remembered right away. Mrs. Hedger claimed the last day's work she was paid for was the 17th of September.
Thank you, Miss Sutcliffe. That may prove extremely useful. And thank you for coming out so late to tell us.
Does Miss Chandler usually work so late?
Alec asked. She's usually home by 6:30. She finished the job she's been working on today, and Mr. Davis asked her to stay on and go over the figures with him.
What figures were those?
She was auditing some company's accounts. She wouldn't say whose. Frankly, neither Vera nor I was particularly interested. Alec laughed.
And who can blame you? Would you like me to run you back to Cherry Trees in the car? If the inspector can spare me for 10 minutes.
Of course.
Underwood looked a bit wistful, as if he'd prefer to escort Isabel himself. Knowing nothing of his driving skills, Alec didn't offer to let him.
Good idea. Take 15 and see if Miss Chandler will open up to you about the audit. Sergeant Piper isn't likely to ring for at least a couple of hours.
Will do. You can send off this cable right away. And I suggest another to the yard to get them moving on querying the domestic service agencies first thing in the morning. Put my name to it.
In the car, Isabel asked. We're still suspects, aren't we?
Strictly speaking, yes. Don't let it worry you. None of you is under serious consideration.
Because of Daisy?
Good heavens, no. We're not allowed to take that sort of thing into account.
A certain amount of bias was inevitable, however. Perhaps they ought to have subjected the three women to closer scrutiny. Perhaps they would have to, if they eliminated both Cartwright and Vaughan. Alec changed the subject.
Were the cleaners you found for the cellar satisfactory?
Excellent. It looks clean as a whistle, and the smell is barely perceptible. I'm so sorry for them. They both fought in the war, and haven't been able to find steady employment since. Their wives both work to make ends meet. The men feel inadequate, not being able to provide for their families. I'm going to have them back to build shelves in the cellar for storing apples, as soon as I've worked out just what I want.
It sounds as if you're quite comfortable moving back in.
Isabel grinned.
None of us believes in ghosts. Vera isn't altogether happy about being in a house where someone was murdered, but I pointed out that we lived for a fortnight with the body actually present. Anyway, she has plenty to occupy her thoughts. I can't tell you how grateful we are for what Daisy's done for her.
She has a penchant for combining helping people with interfering in police investigations,
Alec said dryly, drawing up in front of Cherry Trees.
You don't mind if I come in for a minute?
Not at all. Willie and Vera were drinking coffee in the sitting room. Despite Alec's refusal, Isabel bustled off to fetch cups for him and herself.
Miss Chandler, Willie.
It was difficult to decide how he ought to address the ladies.
I'd like you to confirm the date Miss Sutcliffe passed on to us. The last day's work Mrs. Hedger was paid for.
Or so she claimed. It was the 17th of last month, of course.
You're certain?
Absolutely. I never forget a number.
And will you confirm that today you completed an audit of the accounts of Langridge's, the estate agent?
told you? Neither I nor Isabel.
Just putting together hints from your boss.
Mr. Davis talked about it?
Indirectly. Isabel said you'd finished a big job today, so I assumed. What I really need to know is when you or Mr. Davis intend to give Langridge the results of the audit.
Willie considered, her blonde head tilted, eyes narrowed. I suppose there's no harm, since you already know so much. Mr. Davis is going to ask Mr. Langridge to call at our offices tomorrow morning, whenever convenient to him. Unexpectedly, she giggled. If you ask me, it would be much easier for him to go to Langridge's. When Mr. Langridge came in to request the audit, it was touch and go whether he'd make it up the stairs to Mr. Davis's room.
I take it Mr. Langridge had his suspicions that something was amiss?
Sole proprietorships, one owner and one or more employees, rarely call for an audit until they're fairly sure something's wrong. They'd do better to get an outside audit regularly, like big companies.
Did you know what or whom Langridge suspected?
No. Mr. Langridge has four employees. He probably didn't tell Mr. Davis if he suspected one person in particular. It could bias the audit. I discovered pretty quickly whom he ought to have suspected. I won't confirm your guess, though.
Very proper,
said Alec, grinning. Isabel came in with the coffee. As they were drinking from demitasses, Alec relented and accepted. He emptied the tiny cup rather quicker than was strictly polite, made his adieu, and went out to the car. On the way back to the police station, he reflected that he was indubitably biased in their favour. He could only hope it wouldn't come to arresting one or more of them. Given his ambiguous position in the case, though, he'd be able to leave that dismaying task to D.I. Underwood, who wouldn't be any happier about it than Alec. Happily, another suspect had moved up the list. Alec had been interrupted before telling Underwood about the interesting second item in Tom Tring's note. 30.
Miss Chandler confirmed the 17th,
Alec announced. 17th, said Underwood, taking out a pocket diary. A Monday. Mrs. Hedger went in 3 days a week. Monday, Wednesday and Friday, as she does now, I expect. If she was paid on the Monday, likely she was usually paid each day that she worked, rather than weekly. She wasn't paid on Wednesday. So the victim died Monday night, or sometime Tuesday.
Not that it helps us much.
No, people don't remember what they were doing on a particular day a month ago, unless they had an appointment or an engagement, something worth noting down. What about Miss Chandler's audit?
Davis, her boss, is seeing Langridge tomorrow to give him the results. Miss Chandler naturally refused to confirm the name of the embezzler. I'm reluctant to tackle Vaughan about it tonight. We might queer their pitch.
Yes, better avoid the subject. It doesn't seem to have any bearing on our business, anyway.
Agreed. If we do need the actual figures gone over at some point, it's a job for Piper.
Alec retrieved Tom's note from his inside breast pocket.
You didn't hear the last part of this. It should be more immediately useful than the rest.
Vaughan?
Mrs. Vaughan, according to report. She had a flaming row with Mrs. Gray at Cherry Trees.
From the housekeeper via the gardener?
From the housekeeper originally, I expect, but rather more roundabout.
Tom had been cautious in his note, in case it fell into the wrong hands. But Alec knew him well enough to guess he was hinting that the story had been overheard in a tea shop by Mrs. Tring.
"Fourth or fifth hand," Underwood said gloomily. "Everyone in Beaconsfield is talking about the murder, exaggerating and adding to any little scrap they can possibly claim to know about the Greys. Though with the gardener's name and him being local, we shouldn't have any trouble finding him tomorrow. I'll send a man to Seer Green. When did this row happen?"
"Unknown. We might do worse than making that our first question. Something on the lines of, on what date did your quarrel with Mrs. Grey take place?"
"Leading the witness.
We won't have a judge watching us."
They continued to discuss tactics, and then every conceivable permutation of the scanty evidence and the theoretical possibilities, with Pennycook venturing a few words now and then. In spite of yet more coffee, by the time Ernie Piper's call came through at last, at 12:45, all three were somnolent. Alec, more accustomed than the local men to working through the night, was first to reach for the ringing phone.
"Fletcher?"
"It's me, Chief. The car just turned into the drive."
"Don't let the bloody woman go to bed."
"I'll see what I can do."
Ernie sounded remarkably cheery. The Vaughan's servants must have been good hosts.
"We're on our way."
20 minutes later, the Austin 12 swung into the drive and stopped just short of the garage doors, next to the new wing behind the house. Light showed dimly through the heavy curtains of its ground floor windows. A curtain twitched. A man's face looked out, the electric light making a halo of the corn gold hair Alec recalled from their encounter in the bar of the Saracen's Head. Donald Vaughan. They walked back to the front door. It was already open, and Ernie welcomed them with relief.
"I don't know how much longer I could have kept her downstairs."
"Twitchy, is she?" Underwood asked.
"That's not quite the word I had in mind," Ernie said primly. "Close, but not quite." "No, he's the one that's twitching."
He led them along a narrow corridor, past a couple of closed doors, and one standing open to the dark, silent kitchen. Stairs rose on their left. They came to a last door, probably once the back door of the old house, beyond which was the light, warmth, comfort and colour of a modern sitting room. Alec noted radiators, as well as a good fire. Decidedly, there was money, whether or not its distribution was as they had been told. Ernie ushered them in, and announced them, butler fashion.
"Detective Chief Inspector Fletcher, Detective Inspector Underwood."
Goggling at Alec, Vaughan started up from the depths of an easy chair, spilling the drink in his hand on his dress trousers.
"You!"
he yelped.
"You're a policeman?"
"I am. I've got a few questions I'd like to put to you. Is there somewhere we can go?"
"Stay here," commanded Mrs. Vaughan. She was a formidable figure of a woman, large, well-corseted in her plum-coloured velvet evening frock, well-coiffed and discreetly made up, and wearing what appeared to be good jewellery. A few years older than her husband, Alec guessed.
"Donald has nothing to say that cannot be said in my presence."
Her voice had no trace of the local accent.
"The front room," Vaughan gabbled. "It'll be better, Myra. We won't disturb you. This way, Mr. Inspector."
He scurried towards the four policemen, who parted to let him through the door. Alec followed, with Pennycook bringing up the rear, as arranged earlier. Ernie Piper stayed with Underwood and Mrs. Vaughan. Alec hoped they could cope with her. The front room had probably been the sitting room of the old house. Now it was furnished as an office, rather feminine in style, with an inlaid escritoire, a couple of dusky rose plush armchairs, and some near Hepplewhite side chairs, including one at the desk. Alec glanced into the glass-fronted bookcase and saw fashionable novels where one might expect calfskin-bound editions of venerable classics. Michael Arlen, Charles Morgan, Wolf, War, and Rosamund Leman's Succès de Scandale, Dusty Answer. Alec sat down on the desk chair. It wasn't quite the position of power offered by a seat behind a good, solid, knee-hole desk, but it would do. Vaughan looked round vaguely before sinking into an armchair. He remembered the drink still in his hand, what was left of it, and emptied the glass at one gulp. Pennycook took his stance by the door, slightly to Vaughan's rear. With a gesture at the bookcase, Alec asked,
"Yours?" "No, I'm not a reader. Besides, I don't have time. I often have to work in the evenings, and when I'm free, as often as not, she drags me up to town to rotten highbrow plays or concerts, and she doesn't like me going to the pub."
Once begun, his grievances poured out.
"She has pots of money, but she's so stingy I have to work if I want any sort of life. I'm a good salesman. I'll do much better as a commercial traveller. But no, she wants me right here under her bloody thumb. I tell you, I'm sick of it."
If the victim were Myra Vaughan, the chief suspect would not be far to seek. A motive for killing Judith Gray was less clear-cut.
"You hate your wife, so you had an affair with Mrs. Gray."
"I don't hate her. I just want to get away from her. Judith was beautiful. Gay, fun to be with, and she'd been in the same position as me, with a penny-pinching husband. We were in love."
"You use the past tense, Mr. Vaughan. She's dead."
He sounded defeated. Then the implication of Alec's words sank in. His eyes blazed with hope.
"Isn't she?"
"Almost certainly, but not quite. We should know by tomorrow."
"She might be alive, somewhere in France. How can I find her?"
His shoulders slumped.
"No, she wouldn't have gone without me."
He was very convincing. Could he be acting? Not inconceivable. All salesmen were essentially actors, putting on a persuasive show of enthusiasm for whatever they were touting.
"You intended to go to France with her?"
"She was going to buy a house. We were going to live together as man and wife. She was a modern woman. She didn't care about outdated conventions, and she didn't want ever to marry again. If Myra wanted a divorce, I wouldn't contest it. What am I going to do?"
"Spend a long good stretch in clink for fraud," Alec suspected.
"She was more willing to support you in idleness than Mrs. Vaughan is."
"I wasn't going empty-handed."
Injured innocence played less well than the previous changeable emotions.
"I've managed to save a bit."
Alec didn't ask about the provenance of the savings. No hurry. This was a preliminary interview, and there would be more. Whether Vaughan was still at liberty or not, they still had no firm evidence implicating him in the homicide.
"Either Mrs. Gray deserted you, or she's dead. Did your wife know about the affair?"
"No, of course not."
"According to information received?"
"Well, she might have. All right, she did. I don't know how the deuce she found out. We were bloody careful not to be seen together, and you wouldn't think gossip would travel this far anyway. Myra knows people in High Wycombe, not Beaconsfield. She heard somehow. She drove over to Cherry Trees and had an almighty row with Judith.
You were present?
Good Lord, no. It wasn't that easy to get over there, actually. We don't do a lot of business in Beaconsfield. Judith went to London almost every weekend, unless prospective buyers had an appointment to view her house. Of course, if Myra hadn't made plans for an evening, I could always say I had to show a house and dash over for a couple of hours. The evening bus service is rotten, but not impossible. Sometimes I could even talk Myra into letting me use the car to get to a country property.
He sniggered, amused at having used his wife's car to deceive her.
The presence of the Jowett was noted.
Nosy neighbours? I can't imagine why they should care. Judith certainly didn't care for them.
Suddenly, embarrassingly, he broke down in sobs, his face hidden in his hands.
Oh, God, leave me alone, can't you?
Just one more question. What was Mrs. Gray's reaction to your wife's incursion?
She was bloody furious. What do you think? After that, she wouldn't do anything. She said it would have to wait till we reached France. She didn't abandon me. Oh, God, she's dead.
Alec slipped out of the room, on the way signalling to Pennycook to stay. The behaviour of someone in that sort of semi-hysterical state could not be predicted. The old exterior door between the house and the new wing was too solid to let him hear what was going on beyond. He pictured the position of the chair Mrs. Vaughan had been sitting in when he left. It was turned slightly away from the door. He was less certain whether the hinges had creaked when the door closed behind him. He had been concentrating on Vaughan ahead of him. Standing there wasn't getting him anywhere. Cautiously, he turned the handle and pulled the door towards him till there was a gap of a couple of inches. Now he heard Mrs. Gray's indignant voice.
May have remonstrated with the woman. We did not have a vulgar row. If one speaks firmly and does not back down, people realize one means what one says. I forced her, by force of character, to acknowledge that she ought not to have led a married man astray. I exacted a promise that relations between them would cease, except on a business level, naturally. I wouldn't want to deprive poor Donald of his little job.
And did relations cease? Underwood asked.
Alec guessed from his slightly raised voice that he was aware of the listener at the door.
Yes. Whenever he went out on business in the evening, I watched her house. He never came.
You never spoke to her again?
Certainly not.
And what did your husband think of your interference?
I never spoke to him about it. I saw no need. The matter was settled.
When did you settle it? And what date did you call on Mrs. Gray?
I don't recall the date. It's not the sort of appointment one puts in one's diary.
Roughly.
Really, officer, I've told you I don't recall. I will not be badgered.
Alec decided his time had come. He went in. Neither Underwood nor Ernie Piper was taken by surprise. Myra Vaughan reacted with outrage. She rose to her feet with a majestic surge and exclaimed,
"Three of you! You may bully me, but you can't—"
"Madam, I have no intention of bullying anyone. Inspector, may I have a quick word with you?"
They stepped into the old house and shut the door.
"You heard the fairy tale version of the quarrel," said Underwood. "That's the first she said to the purpose. We had a diatribe about how her family lived in the manor forever, and always been respected and respectable, with a family tree back to her great-great-grandfather, and the respected professions of every respectable male. If any were less than respectable, she didn't mention them. I couldn't shut her up. I hope you had better luck.